Today is April 22nd, 2020, and this is episode number 527 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, a cornucopia of confounding conundrums. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you over to our Facebook group. Our sponsor this week is ExpressVPN. And later in the show, I'm going to tell you about how you can get 3 free months of service with ExpressVPN. That's cool, right? And for right now, though, we have John Martellaro joining me in the hot seat this week.
John. Happy to be here. I have my weird hat on today.
Uh-oh.
So watch out. We're in for a ride.
Oh, boy. So, all right. Our first topic today, John, is your premise that Apple is on a roll. So explain.
They are. We went through some dark years in 2015 and 17 where we were doing counts of how many days and years it had been since a product had been updated. And it seemed like Apple had forgotten about the Mac and didn't really have its heart in the Mac anymore. And nothing exciting was happening with the iPads, and sales were kind of, up and downish, but not really accelerating or climbing in a good way. And all we had every year to depend on was a brand new, exciting, shiny iPhone. And an Apple Watch. But I have noticed lately that things are back on track with Apple.
Wait, hold on, though. There was also Apple dropping product lines. Apple dropped its display line. I mean,
Apple Airport base station.
Yeah, exactly. Both of which are still very, 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 very frustrating. On top of the very long periods of time that we were going with the Mac product line.
Yeah, I remain constantly distressed that Apple dropped the Wi-Fi base station they had.
Yeah, I wish Apple was doing a mesh product today. I would like to have an Apple mesh network in my home.
You don't normally think of Apple as a company that is not up to speed technically on these kinds of products.
Mm-hmm.
And so there must have been some sort of cataclysm within Apple that made them decide to drop the product. Maybe they had future plans. Maybe they thought 5G would make home Wi-Fi obsolete. Maybe they had plans for satellites. You know, I've been in meetings like that at Lockheed Martin where somebody says, well, next year we're planning on launching geosynchronous satellites is going to solve all these problems. So why do we need to worry about your little tiny project? Canceled.
Yeah,
and then sure. The big project loses its funding or gets into trouble or there's a space launch vehicle explodes on the launch pad. And then all of a sudden, these other supporting projects, which would have been easy to do, you know, have to get resurrected.
Well,
maybe that happened. Maybe some senior team members quit.
The Wi-Fi router situation in particular is frustrating from this standpoint. Like I had the impression that Apple just felt like this business wasn't huge and it was outside of their core competency, and at that point their core competency appeared to be making iPhones thinner. That seemed to be like the number one thing.
But I can't believe that. How can Wi-Fi be outside of core competency? I mean, that's their bread and butter.
Well, Apple,
Apple launched Wi-Fi at home. I mean, I still remember Macworld New York with Phil Schiller jumping out of a window with an iBook in his hands. And that was the year they launched the airport base station, saucer.
But Apple also introduced the floppy drive, the mini floppy drive thingy. I mean, you know, things do change, but my problem, and I don't know that it was Apple deciding that Wi-Fi was outside of their core competency, but my problem is that even if it's a relatively minor business, so much of what we do, and Phil Schiller, what did he talk about, right? He talked about Apple being at the center of where we live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He has said that on more than one occasion. It's been a while since he said it, but he has said it on more than one occasion. I can't remember if Tim Cook has also said it. Do you remember, John?
I don't remember specifically.
I know that Phil Schiller has said it. And to your point that you made a few moments ago, Wi-Fi is very much the center of our lives, and all of our devices are using Wi-Fi. And
machine is not responding.
Nice, Siri. Excellent timing. the idea. Stop. Seriously, the idea of. The idea of having Apple being in charge of our Wi-Fi and our Wi-Fi security, to me, is super important. And again,
just hit the hot button there, security. In a day when it seems like every product you buy has some sort of ulterior motive, some sort of backdoor, some sort of contact with the mothership, some sort of a way of invading your privacy, collecting information about you, or just being generally sloppy when it comes to security. The world is ready for a home Wi-Fi base station that you can have confidence in.
Well, and we have that.
That isn't going to be hacked, that supports IPv6, that isn't going to track your browsing habits.
You know, yeah, and then save them on a server somewhere, which a lot of the current mesh networks do. They save all your settings on a server rather than on the local device. Hmm. And I really want Apple making my Wi-Fi network. I want an Apple mesh network today. And it drives me nuts that they got out of that business and didn't update Airport to include mesh capabilities.
Let's send a link to this show to Tim Cook.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear that, Mr. Cook? Please. Please. So anyway, but to that point, I mean that was a pretty grim year. And please understand that we know that this year is grimmer in so many more important ways, right? We're not saying that, you know, we're not saying that Apple not releasing enough products to, you know, for us to satisfy our geeks is somehow the most important thing in the world. I'm assuming you're not saying that, John.
Well, I've already said in an editorial or two that Apple needs to continue to supply us with the important tools we need to get through this pandemic.
Yeah.
I applaud Apple for their courage and their perseverance and their flexibility in continuing to deliver products that people will need to get through this. You can't just throw in the towel and say, okay, we're suffering, we quit.
Right. But my point is that as Apple fans, it was frustrating for several years. As Mac fans in particular, it was frustrating for a few years. But in the grand scheme of things, that is not as important as the kinds of suffering that a lot of people are going through today all over the world. I just want to keep that in context. But yes. Regardless, now it does seem like, and it's like the last 18 months, maybe even we might be coming up on 2 years this June, where Apple seems to be firing on all cylinders and they're releasing more products. Macs have gotten updates. We've gone from an update every 6 years to getting an update.
There's even hope for the iMac Pro.
Yeah, the iMac Pro right now is the dark spot there. 2 years, 2 years old, 2 years old, three, man.
Two and a half. There may be some hope. I did a podcast recently with a NASA engineer who suggested that Apple was waiting for a serious bump in processor power on the Xeons.
They should update something in that device and or charge less money for it. Charging brand new prices for, when was it? iMac Pro.
December 17 came out.
That's when it shipped. It was announced the June before that.
Yeah, WWDC.
Right.
Yeah,
so that six, the Apple doesn't get to like erase those 6 months. And I mean, it was those technologies were new when they were announced. They were already 6 months old when it shipped. And it was June 5th, 2017. So you're right. This June, the thing is almost 3 years. That's so ridiculous, man. Say Apple firing on all cylinders. Apple is firing on seven out of eight cylinders.
I agree with you. I had agreed with you But let me provide a little bit of color because of this discussion I had with an asset engineer.
Okay.
So he did a benchmark, WinPack benchmark, which is the standard package you use to evaluate supercomputer performance. And the 2019 Mac Pro came in at 1.5 teraflops, mm-hmm. which about 10 years ago would have been supercomputer territory. Mm-hmm. The iMac Pro came in at 900 gigaflops. Mm-hmm. So about 2/3 as fast, roughly.
Okay.
So the question is, given that you've got an iMac Pro in the year 2020 that can do almost a teraflop, what are you going to do? What Intel processor are you going to put in there? What technology are you going to change? How many more cores are you going to add to double the performance, which would make it worthy of a new machine?
Then cut the price. Don't charge me 2020 prices for 2017 technology. Right? That's the thing. I don't care what they have to change. If they can't change anything, then just make it cheaper. If they could say, it turns out there haven't been any new GPUs released, so we can't update those, although there have been, but whatever. And there's no new processor that's worthy of the iMac Pro, so we can't change that. So we're going to cut the price. Do something. Don't charge me 2020 prices for 2017 technology.
I agree with your mantra. I've even quoted you. That's true. But in terms of getting an update, I don't think it's unreasonable to wait a few years on a machine like that.
I think
a serious boost in power.
I think it is all the more egregious that it's a pro machine. Pro machines should be state of the art, not 3-year-old technology. And like at the very least, change out the GPU, bump the megahertz a little bit if that's what you have to do.
Hopefully, it'll be next up to bat in Apple's rethinking of the Mac.
Yeah, it probably will be. I'm sure that we'll see. I would be shocked if we don't see some kind of update to that thing in June, or whenever the WWDC remote event happens.
Yeah. So, do you think there's a problem with updating the iMac Pro faster than the Mac? Than the Mac Pro?
Yeah, they both need to be updated every year. They both need to be updated every year. Like, I mean, this is a no-brainer. It is a pro machine. Pro machine with top
dollar. Well, the 2019 Mac Pro started shipping limited quantity in December, right? Mm-hmm.
Sometime later this year, it should be updated.
So along with the iMac Pro, maybe not at WWDC, but maybe in concert with it in the fall?
I think that the iMac Pro should be updated immediately, as quickly as possible, and it should ship as quickly as possible. I mean,
what do you know about the sales numbers? Has it been met with great enthusiasm and flying off the shelves?
What did Tim Cook say? Tim Cook said that they were pleased with the results initially, but they've never been specific about it. But, it's one of those things where the sales numbers don't matter. These are flagship devices that are going to influencers. And I don't mean influencers in the social media standpoint. I mean influencers from, from musicians and movie houses and studios and networks and...
research labs.
National research labs. Yeah, super influencer there. But I mean, like the people who need these machines have an outsized influence.
Yeah, that's why Apple gave Craig Hunter a Mac Pro back in January, I think. $31,000 machine.
Nice.
A terabyte of RAM.
That's
28 cores.
I could really play some Civilization on that. and I don't have a pro device on my desk. I've got the iMac 5K on my desk, and it's a lovely machine, I might add.
I still have a 2013 Mac Pro. It's just humming. I mean, I had some problems with Yosemite, some serious graphics lockups that I wrote about with some great anxiety and annoyance. But ever since Sierra, and mostly and 100% since High Sierra, this iMac has been like uptime of years. <That's good. laughs> It just keeps on running.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So on the rest of the Macs.
Yeah, this topic is supposed to be Apple and Roll, and all we've done is mostly me complain.
So I've got a pretty good feeling about a 14-inch MacBook Pro coming soon.
To replace the 13-inch?
The rumors are that its screen size will grow from 13.6 to 14.1. So then we'll have a partner for the 16-inch MacBook Pro, a little brother.
Yep.
There are pretty good rumors afoot that Apple's ready to announce a new iMac, standard iMac, with likely the desktop version of the 10th generation, which is Comet Lake. And that would be cool.
Yep.
There were some rumors back, I forget when it was, maybe January, February, about a total redesign of the case. And that was based on a patent.
The case
for I don't think it's a case, a new design for the sort of what you might see in a science fiction movie, one piece of glass, solid piece of work.
For which device? You cut out for a second.
The iMac. The standard iMac with its grill at the bottom and the Apple in the bottom, instead of being all screen, is kind of dated in its design.
Yeah, that's true. It's been, it still looks amazing, but it has been with us for a long time.
I don't see why Apple needs to have that grill at the bottom.
Well, there's no grill.
Why it can't be?
Talking about a grill? You mean talking about the blank space?
The aluminum bar at the bottom of the display where the Apple is.
Yeah. That's probably mostly to house the speaker, and I'm sure that space is being used.
Figure out a way to do without it and have a full screen, zero bezel iMac. That would knock our socks off.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. That would be lovely, actually.
That would.
Well, one of the things you said before the show was that you were probably going to have to replace everything that you, all your Apple stuff this year. Or is it this year or next year?
Yeah, well, probably when I get my iPhone 12 5G, I'll be ready for a new Apple Watch, because I've got a 4 and I skipped the 5. My wife has a 5. And I've been enamored with the idea of having an always-on display, but I decided to skip the 5. And see what happens with either body temperature measurement or blood glucose, maybe. See what's happening with the 6. Okay. I've got a 2015 iPad Pro, the very first model. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be replaced.
The
It's a 12.9-inch iPad Pro.
And is the one that... Wait, was the 12.9 also updated, or was it just the 11-inch? That was updated earlier this year.
Several updates. The 12.9-inch iPad Pro was updated. Along with the, 11-inch now?
Yeah, okay.
10.9.
Yeah, I got the 11-inch.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like having a big screen iPad. My wife has a 10.5-inch iPad Pro, and it's just a little too cramped for me, especially when I'm reading news or Flipboard or... whatever. I just like to have a big piece of glass in my lap.
Yep, fair enough. Do you read in bed?
That's due.
You know, that's my sort of litmus test.
Yeah, but reading Christopher Moore novels for those people who are
in love with
Christopher Moore. I lay on my back and I rest it on my chest. I have an iPad Mini 5 for that. It's light.
Yeah, okay.
Where he's like 300 grams.
Yeah. Yeah. People that read on their back and read on their iPad seem to like the Mini. Those of us who read on our side tend to like the book-sized 11-inch
one. Oh. And then I have a 2015 MacBook, the classic original MacBook with the original butterfly keyboard. Mm-hmm. and 128 gigabytes of storage. And so I'm thinking I'm due for a new MacBook Pro of some kind. Maybe I'll inherit my wife's, get her a 14-inch.
Would you get an Air, or would you get a
Pro? Oh no, I'd never get an Air. I need 4 ports. That constantly irritates me.
You don't have
4
ports on your MacBook.
I know, I have a dock. I have to use another World Computing dock on my MacBook, or otherwise it would be unusable.
Okay. Well, how about your desktop?
So all of a sudden, I'm up in the air. But as long as this 2013 Black Cylinder sits there gloriously and just hums along, it's still a pretty fast computer. The nice thing about a Pro machine is that it sits on your desktop and it's stable. You know, you don't do a lot of unplugging of things. And every time you try to pack up a MacBook Pro and go on the road, in the old days, as Stephen Colbert says, in the before times, when you could go to a Starbucks with your MacBook Pro and do some work, then you come home and getting it all wired up correctly again for podcasting and making sure all the connectors are right, nothing doesn't get unstable, is a pain. So I like having a desktop Mac that just sits there and stays in a fixed configuration.
All right. If you're going to replace your trash can iMac today.
Today, if I had to.
Yeah.
If it's like died.
Yes. What would you replace it with?
I would buy them with grudging acceptance. I would buy a Mac Mini loaded with 32 gig of RAM.
Really? Oh, the Mac Mini, the current Mac Mini is a fine device, that's for sure. It's a fine device, but you wouldn't get the iMac Pro or splurge on the entry-level Mac Pro Tower?
I can't afford a $7,000 computer. Come on.
All right, come on, man.
You're giving me a raise, right? You're going to give me a raise, right?
No, I am
can't
not.
Afford it.
I am absolutely and positively not doing that. But well, it's a $5,000 machine, man. What are you talking about? What are you talking about, $7,000? What's the start at? Is it $599 or I thought it was $49.99. $59.99. It's only $6,000.
$6,000 plus sales tax, plus AppleCare, plus...
Plus your education discount.
What's the base memory?
Education discount.
Anna.
Base memory is 256 gigs of storage, but you can add your own storage because...
I mean the base RAM.
Right, I'm getting to that. It is 32 gigs.
Oh, well, then that's okay. I can live with 32. I'll never buy another computer with 16 gig of RAM.
You know, I tell you, I'm apoplectic. The notion of having a $6,000 machine with only 32 gigs of RAM seems to me to be a bit crazy, let alone with 256 gigs of storage. Of course, you can add your own storage and you can add additional RAM.
Yeah.
To it. Like, I certainly wouldn't order my RAM from Apple. I'd order it from OWC at this point.
Well, the NASA engineer I told you about, it was doing the Linpack benchmark. I asked him, how many times faster is it than a 2013 Mac Pro? 10 times faster. And he said, no, it's not 10, but it's more than twice as fast. So here we go, 7 years later, and you're getting a computer that's maybe 3 times faster.
Did he have the $31,000 machine? Just the guy with that one? And it's only twice as fast?
3 times faster.
Huh. I like to see some...
And that's in a mode where you can seriously exploit the hardware. Because the Linpack package uses linear algebra and vector processing. It really exploits the hardware. Mm-hmm. In your everyday operation, I imagine... I think John Key told me that when he started messing around with his new 2019 Mac Pro, things seemed exceptionally snappy on the display. But for a writer who's surfing and experimenting occasionally, that kind of power is wasted, I think.
Yeah, you're right. None of us need the Mac Pro. None of us at TMO need the Mac Pro. We probably have someone listening who needs the Mac Pro. But none of us writing at TMO need the Mac Pro.
No. Besides, it would have to sit under my desk, and I'd be back in the mode of all those wires wrapped around the back of the desk and down into the computer.
Don't you have a bunch of wires coming out of your trash can?
Yeah, but it sits up on the desktop where I can get to them, right behind my display. So if I need to unplug something, I don't have to reach around and crawl around on the floor, open up the back of it, or try to rotate it around to get to a plug, because the other plugs are constraining me from moving the Mac. That's a pain.
Sure.
The desktop Mac, I can rotate gently, get to all the ports. It's really a glorious computer, considering all the flack it has taken. It's been perfect for me. Anyway.
Fair. All right. So you would replace your 2013 Mac Pro with an iMac, which is very understandable. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Mac Mini. Mm-hmm. I misspoke. And you would probably get a MacBook Pro to replace your MacBook.
Yep.
And an Apple Watch 6 to replace your Apple Watch 4.
Yep.
And are you on a new iPhone every year plan?
I was not on a plan, but I was buying a new phone every year out of pocket, trading in my old phone for cash, offsetting the price of a new phone. I have a XS Max. Somehow, because of events, I never got around to buying an 11. I was on the tip of walking out of the store a couple of times, 11 Pro, but it didn't happen. So December, January rolled around, and I thought, well, let's just wait now.
Fair enough. All right, let me tell you a little bit about ExpressVPN. So we all know how ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, right? But here's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. It's extra important right now. So many of us are stuck at home. It's only a matter of time until you run out of stuff to watch on Netflix. I know this week I've been binging on shows. Just started Star Trek Discovery. Listen, it's so simple to do. You fire up ExpressVPN app, change your location to, say, the UK, refresh Netflix, and that's it. Because ExpressVPN hides your IP and lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries. So just think about all the Netflix libraries you can go through. Love anime? Use ExpressVPN to access Japanese Netflix and be spirited away. See what they did there? But it's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service. Hulu, BBC, iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there, but the reason I use ExpressVPN to watch shows is it's ridiculously fast. There's never any buffering or lag, and you can stream in HD, no problem. ExpressVPN is also compatible with all your devices, phones, media consoles, smart TVs, you know, more, whatever. So you can watch what you want to watch on a personal device or on the big screen wherever you are. And if you visit my special link right now at expressvpn.com/ACM, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free to support the show, to watch what you want, and protect yourself with ExpressVPN. At expressvpn.com/ACM. Again, get 3 extra months of ExpressVPN for free. Just go to expressvpn.com/ACM. Okay, John, let's move on to a topic I know is very interested, that you were very interested in, and that's streaming services.
Yes. Charlotte and I are nutcases when it comes to streaming video. Mm-hmm. Charlotte Henry, our writer. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about it on Background Mode, mm-hmm. and occasionally on TDO. And we're both very keen observers of the strategy and the tactics and the success and the viewers.
Okay.
So I subscribe to Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
To Netflix. To Apple TV Plus, because it was free. I got it by virtue of my new iPad Mini 5. And CBS All Access in order to get Picard, which I love. Finished watching that. Star Trek Discovery is up soon. Don't know exactly the date. I never have subscribed to Hulu. Oh, early in the early days when Hulu was free, I had Hulu to charge me. I never got around to it. And I suppose if I were going to add one, I would add HBO to get to Westworld. Although that'll probably show up in syndication somewhere else soon. So I don't know everything about everything, and I don't know if I'm going to subscribe to Peacock when it comes out. I think that's a lost cause. So I've got a smattering of streaming services. I try to keep tabs on the rest of them.
Are you doing CBS All Access for the Star Trek shows?
Yeah, I just mentioned that. Okay. Star Trek Picard, Star Trek Discovery. Yeah.
I just started Discovery this last week.
Season one?
About 5 episodes into season 2.
Have you noticed season 2 is a lot better than season 1?
I thought season 1 was good.
Season 2 is better.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I really like the new captain, Christopher Pike, from the guy from Hell on Wheels. Yep. What's his name?
I forget the actor's name.
Anson Mount.
Okay.
Anson Mount is terrific as Captain Christopher Pike.
Yep, he definitely is.
So, as an observer of these, one of the things that nags on my mind, state and potential of Apple TV Plus. The reason I feel that way is because I've had a really hard time warming up to the shows. I've watched Dickinson with glee. I adored Dickinson. I thought it was great. Charlotte got me wound up about the morning show. Mm-hmm. At first, it seemed like the people were kind of whiny and self-important in early shows, and it wasn't my science fiction techie cup of tea. But Charlotte's continued reviews and enthusiasm for it whet my appetite. So I stayed with it, and the morning show was pretty good, although not as good as The Mandalorian or Picard. It's a decent signature show. But the other shows beyond Dickinson, like For All Mankind, upset me. For All Mankind dwelled on things that weren't very inspiring. Like you said before in TDO, I think one time, it's true. Some of the things that they talk about are true things that happened. But in my mind, they're not fun to dwell on. And
by all means, let's not in any way whatsoever talk about like real life. Let's gloss it over and pretend that the bad things didn't happen. Like nothing ever goes wrong with that.
It depends on what your motivation is. Is your motivation young people to go into space?
No, that's what? That's why are you birthing the showmaker?
Every producer has a vision. Apple talks about storytelling that uplifts people, storytelling that changes people's lives, storytelling that expands people's horizons, that teaches them things, that alters and improves their perspectives.
Where did Apple say
Where does telling dreary truth come into this? I'm talking about Astronaut Affairs.
Well, okay, I do. Pretending that the astronauts.
Brian is apoplectic.
I am apoplectic on this. This actually drives me bananas. Pretending that the astronauts were superheroes is not interesting. It's not interesting.
If you're a historian, you have that frame of mind. If you're writing a book about. Tell the story of the real people and the real things that they did. But when you're writing historical fiction, your perspective is different.
People like drama. People like friction.
A lot of people like to see other people dragged down. Self.
Listen. Whitewashing. NASA's.
It's not history, Brian. It's not history.
The affairs were.
It's storytelling. Storytelling has a purpose. Storytelling's purpose is to uplift, to inspire.
No. That is not some objective purpose of storytelling.
Yes, it is.
To be uplifting. You're telling me that all stories should be uplifting? Some stories are dark. Some stories are awful. Some stories are horrific. Some stories are uplifting for sure.
But they're dark for a reason. They're dark in order to have us learn from So there's always an altruistic motive. No producer goes into the idea, let's spend $2.8 million on a pilot to make people want to commit suicide, to make them feel dreary, to make them feel depressed. Nobody goes into a series like that.
Are you telling me that you think that acknowledging the astronauts had affairs is going to make people want to commit suicide?
No, you're stretching a metaphor. What I'm saying is that nobody goes into production, an expensive production, without some vision. Some value that they want to express. Why are we telling this story? What's to be learned from it? Learning from people's mistakes? Learning how our political views have changed, or
how
political
about
oppression of the past?
Showing
how we overcame obstacles?
How
perseverance? Go ahead.
How about showing that astronauts were humans with flaws, and yet they did these amazing things?
Well, that's the stuff for books like The Right Stuff, where you show people the reality. Trying to distinguish that hard between movie making and book writing. But The Right Stuff was historical. For All Mankind is historical fiction, in a sense.
Well, it's alt.
Where people never said
history.
These things. They were, you know, these are not quotes from people. These are not necessarily all the actual events.
But the astronauts did have affairs. We know that. I mean,
we're not certain that there was an astronaut who went into a bar, mouthed off, and said things to a reporter he shouldn't have said, and he lost his job. I'm pretty sure that was made up.
Okay. And?
And it's not necessarily something that's fun for me to watch. So I quit.
Fair enough there. I mean, I get it that you just didn't enjoy it, but I really don't like the idea of ascribing all these necessary purposes and intents to uplift and to inspire people to go to space. I don't think that's have anything to do with the show. That show is about, to me, it is about how history would have been different. And at the same time, it is telling...
then focus on that. If that's the theory, if the theory of the show is how that, instead of dabbling in sidelines that just drag down
the... How many episodes did you watch?
Two. When the wife started collecting the astronauts' property and throwing them out onto the front yard, I switched. Once I watched something else.
Okay, well, it turns out
because
that
the show wasn't entertaining me.
It turns out that the show is all about alternative history and what might have been different.
I know. Let's do that. Let's do that in spades. Let's do it scientifically. Let's do it in an inspiring way. Let's explore the inroads and see how it might have panned out politically and technically. Let's do that. But no, they had to dabble in sideline stuff.
All right. We can move on. I vehemently disagree.
Well, this goes to some of the other shows I'm having.
Okay.
I've watched, let's see, The Elephant Story. What is that?
The Elephant Queen.
The Elephant Queen. That was excellent. That is maybe the best nature series show I've ever watched in my life.
And you mentioned you've seen
Elephant Queen. I've seen a lot of nature documentaries in my life. Lots of shows about elephants and their travails. This was excellent. I watched the trailer for Defending Jacob. The idea of depression and the stress of having to go through this drama of having a child unjustly accused of a crime. I never got interested in C. I had a hard time with that. I watched the first few minutes of Home Before Dark and the exploits of a 9-year-old girl. There's something missing in these shows. There's some sort of hook, some sort of zing, some sort of trap that makes you say, yeah, this lights up my mind, makes me want to explore, and I feel like I'm a happy, interested, excited participant. No, the shows are kind of like, do I have to watch this? It's my homework for the Mac Observer. Oh, I hate it.
Well, I very much enjoy C. I think it's a terrific show. I think it is absolutely and positively a flagship show. And I very much enjoyed For All Mankind, although I would say that of the four shows that shipped, actually, I guess there were five shows. Did Dickinson ship at launch, or was that like
day one? All episodes of.
So that was, there were five shows at launch then, I think. And For All Mankind was probably, I still haven't watched Dickinson. I intend to. I know, please don't hate me. I intend to watch it.
Oh, Brian, you haven't watched Dickinson? It's cool. It's erotic.
I also have this thing called the internet. But the For All Mankind was probably my fourth out of four favorites, but I did enjoy it. Home Before Dark, I think, was a fantastic show. Just absolutely, absolutely fantastic. I wish I hadn't binged it, but it's a fantastic show. But I do get what you're saying from the standpoint of, like, these, like, a lot of the shows on Apple TV Plus so far feel like middle of the road shows. Is that?
Yeah.
It's not quite how you put it. We didn't actually put it any particular way before the show.
Well, Amazing Stories, the first episode about time travel in the house, I ripped on background mode with Charlotte. I mean, come on, going into a basement and staring at a barometer, and all of a sudden you go back and this is like 1960s Twilight Zone stuff. You know, we didn't have the script, we didn't have the manpower, we didn't have the computer graphics effects. We just had this script that somebody pulled out of a desk drawer from 1970s Amazing Stories and never sold. How do they travel in time? Well, there's this special kind of storm that comes along. When the barometric pressure drops below a certain level, you go back 100 years in time. Ooh, what high-tech stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty
lame. Ah, I ripped it.
Yeah, that's pretty lame. I would add, though, that not only do some of the shows on Apple TV Plus feel like middle-of-the-road shows, there aren't a lot yet. And
if Apple had a rich back catalog where there were hundreds and hundreds of beloved shows that were proven and tested and had star power,
yeah,
and you could mix a few of these special shows in with it, you'd say, hey, they're trying to do something different.
That's what Netflix is.
They're just doing the same old stuff.
That's what Netflix is.
When it's all they have. Yeah.
Well, it's not. Yeah,
when it's all you got.
It's not
trouble.
It's not that all the shows are middle of the road. I do think that The Morning Show is a flagship show. I think that C is a flagship show. I know you thoroughly enjoyed Dickinson, but like the standout amazing shows are definitely few in quantity, leaving the rest of the stuff to kind of feel like middle of the road stuff. And if you look at Amazon Prime, they've got a whole bunch of middle of the road shows, and they have some, you know, some not great shows, but they also have a lot of great shows.
I think what you're saying is what you're nibbling on the edge is something for everyone. Apple TV Plus can't be characterized as something for everyone.
Not yet.
Spectrum is not broad enough yet.
Not yet. Yeah. Not yet. And I don't understand that pace. Of course, you know, the pace that we're seeing, you know, like right now, Hollywood is essentially on hiatus. I think there's probably lots of writing going on, and there's probably been lots of editing and effects done at home, but there's no new filming happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And but this pace that Apple has been on with Apple TV Plus predates coronavirus. So, you know, we can't blame coronavirus for that pace. And I mean, we know that they've signed a whole bunch of shows I don't know, man.
Do we get the feeling? Can we agree or disagree on the idea of putting its toes in the waters to see how things went before they committed more money?
Nope. I think they're pretty committed to it. I think they're pretty committed to it, but that they're not doing a great job of executing. You know, one of the things I've talked about, possibly with you on TDO, maybe on this show with other guests, is the dangers of having tech guys giving notes to creatives. And I mean,
there was that one apocryphal story about Tim Cook.
Yeah, can't these people be nicer?
I don't know. I've seen that story. What's the word? Disproven. Tim Cook says he never did it.
Okay, well, that's good. I didn't catch that. I was willing to believe it, John, in part because we know that the first season of Carpool Karaoke was crap. And it was crap because of meddling from someone at Apple. Remove the profanity, you know, recut it all, make it nicer, make it more family friendly. And
well, you feel that way because you haven't watched it. Dickinson is erotic and has rough language.
Oh, it's the scene.
You wouldn't expect that from a show about a poetress.
Yeah, C is violent, and C and Dickinson and The Morning Show to me are, The Morning Show in particular, people are really awful to each other in a completely different way than people are awful to each other in C. There's definitely some awfulness happening in C. So maybe those things didn't happen.
I don't think there was much meddling.
We know that there was meddling in Carpool Karaoke. And we know that that first season that resulted from that was garbage.
Yeah, but that was just the initial foray into a live kind of, you know, live act
maybe
kind of thing.
Maybe Apple
script approval. Script approval and concept approval is at the highest level. And while those Hollywood managers who were hired by Apple have pretty good authority to, you know, define what they want to pursue, I'm sure that Apple executives have still veto power. And they're still getting accustomed to the idea of what story concepts are going to pan out and what story concepts appeal to them personally, what they think will win awards. And sometimes their gut instinct is a little off. And I think it's showing.
So check this out. What if that story about Tim Cook wanting people to be nicer is real and all of these shows were a lot meaner? I don't actually believe that. I mean, because that would be like, oh my, maybe he has a point. Maybe he was right and they need to dial that stuff back because C is very, very violent. There are awful things that happen. People are terrible to each other in The Morning Show. And as you mentioned, Dickinson has its eroticism. If Tim Cook said that he never did that, then I'm glad to hear it. I was too willing to believe it because of Carpool Karaoke. But maybe Apple learned its lesson from that. Maybe like that was them dipping their toes, and then they realized that the results of them giving notes to people and demanding changes produces inferior quality, and then, you know, they gave the new guys free hands.
Let me tell you what I think.
Okay.
You and I have discussed in print, I believe, and maybe on TV, that Apple wanted to produce great stories of quality. And there was this notion that Apple was going to do special. And so in contrast to, say, Netflix, where they have good metrics, years and years of metrics, people love what's going to turn them on and get them agitated and excited, and how certain kinds of trailers are going to go viral and how to whip up a fervor on technical, geeky, exciting, fun, buzzworthy shows. Apple executives said, no, we're going to do something quiet and cool and beautiful and touching and content worthy and more award-winning. And I think that took them out of the frame of mind. Something that really got people jazzed up in the crudest possible context, if you know what I mean. I think that's that kind of mindset kept Tim Cook and other Apple executives from focusing on what was going to be really fun and exciting and ring up big numbers. And when push came to shove and they ran out of time, and so they went with what we've got, and what we've got is sort of limited. That's my theory.
You cut out for a second. They went with what we got, and...
The shows have that limp feeling, that uninspiring, no jazz, dreary, preachy feeling.
Yeah, no, I don't feel it. Yeah, I keep coming back to middle of the road. And that includes Home Before Dark, a show that I thoroughly enjoyed. And
I'll give it another shot.
It's not great TV. I enjoyed it a lot. I binged it over a day and a half, essentially, which was, I think it was 10 episodes, maybe even 12. But my point is that even though I enjoyed it so much, it's not, you know, it's not House of Cards. It's not The Morning Show. It's not C. It's not Justified. It's not Picard.
Mandalorian.
Right? Or The Mandalorian, right. Right. It's not, you know, it's not that sort of, it's not that quality, not that caliber of show. Mm. Not that caliber of show. I do recommend it, though. Which, you know, maybe that's contradictory, but yeah. So what, you know, what is Apple going to do? I know one of the things that theoretically predicated this, us talking about this, was the fact that Netflix has got they're claiming 15 million new subscribers, 16 million new subscribers.
Something like that. I would think it's 14.77. That.
And, you know, where does Apple isn't releasing numbers. One would assume there have been more people watching Apple TV, maybe more subscribers, although I'm sure that we have this massively disproportionate number of current subscribers who are getting it free based on having a new Apple device. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this, because we do have this big... We have this big hiatus where new shows aren't being are not being filmed right now. New episodes are not being filmed right now of anything. And at some point, the things that are in the hopper and you know that can be edited at home, and you know scored at home, and you know and finished at people's homes, those shows are going to run out at some point.
And that was Apple's bad luck. You know, they had good luck with the timing of the iPhone on an expensive, high-quality phone that we need now. They had bad luck with Apple TV Plus in that Tim Cook insisted on going with original content and gave up on the idea of acquiring a catalog of shows. That seems to be, in hindsight, to be an unfortunate decision.
One of the things that Ken Ray, I was on Ken Ray's... I think it's called In a Minute. It's his new podcast that takes place 20-minute episodes through Monday through Friday. And he, a great show, by the way. I thoroughly recommend it. One of the things he asked me was that did Apple need a back catalog for Apple TV Plus? And my response to that was that Apple probably doesn't need it, but that it would have given Apple TV Plus a boost.
Yeah, it was all about the timing. At the time Apple made the decision, original content only, it seemed like a good decision. The question now is, will this virus and the effects on Apple TV, its lack of content and its lack of buzzworthy, high quality, amazing content lead to a decision to abandon it? I know you said earlier in the show that you're committed in the long run. I don't believe that. I believe that if Apple TV Plus continues to do poorly and the ratings are terrible, and in November they only have maybe 10 or 15% of the people who were getting a free sign up, Apple may decide that this was an ill adventure. I think that can happen.
It could. I agree with you with your wording that it could happen. But I really don't think that it will. I think that if Apple was really concerned about how much money it was bringing in with Apple TV Plus that it would have been charging more than $5 a month in the first place?
Well, they couldn't do that because remember there was the ill-timed leak that Apple was going to charge $9.99 a month for back in October. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about that. And then a week later, Disney came out and announced officially it was going to be $6.99 for Plus. And that just torpedoed Apple's intentions completely. And
Apple had $6.99.
Apple was forced to undercut Disney, realizing with some modesty and perspective about what the value of their content was. And Apple, don't underestimate Apple's greed either. I'm a company. When they see a project that's not doing well and losing billions, they're going to cut it because it's an offset against their services revenue. Fit. You take a big enough hit in lost revenue in Apple TV, it's going to show bad performance for the growth of their services sector, and the analysts are going to get all upset. And the executives are going to get upset, and bonuses are paid. It's just going to be a mess.
Well, so 20 million subscribers subscribers of $5 a month. That's 1.2 billion a year in revenues with 20 million subscribers, assuming that we get past the point where people are watching for free.
Yeah. I think that's about the right number too.
If
and that's not going to pay the bills.
From an ecosystem standpoint, it might though. Right, from the standpoint of how much, you know, what is
Apple doesn't lump things together though.
Sure, it does.
I mean, it looks at the ROI of group, and if a specific sector is not making for a long period of time, it will get cut. And it's no skin off Apple's nose. I mean, one thing to ponder is what would be the public relations and perspective. If Apple were to announce the demise of Apple TV, some of these things are no doubt. I predicted that Quibi would fail with Charlotte. I predicted that Peacock would fail. Wouldn't be unreasonable for Apple to TV Plus to fail.
Here's the problem with Apple having to kill Apple TV Plus. It would be the, Apple shouldn't do it. Apple didn't know what it's doing. It would be the quick scapegoat for anything that Apple does that's new. And it would be like, you know, this product is going to fail just like Apple TV Plus did. And controlling and feeding the narrative standpoint, I believe that there is value in Apple not providing that sort of fuel for the grist. If I can mix
metaphors. Remember when Steve Jobs took over at Apple? And the first thing he did was kill the printer business and the Newton, and also that software tool for building apps. It got people all upset.
Yeah, but it's different. Listen, if Apple can't continue to add more shows, and if some of those shows don't turn out to be great shows, that would be the reason to kill it. But if Apple can continue to add shows, and some of those shows are great, then Apple will continue with the service.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you have to be able to point to some big winners and for Apple to justify carrying on. They can say, well, we had some winners like The Morning Show and maybe C, and we had some losers like Amazing Stories. But look at the great ones we did, and we're going to carry on. That would work. But if they continue on with the same caliber material they're doing now.
And dribs and drabs too.
They ought to just get out.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If they can't increase the pace and if some of that content isn't great, then I will agree with you that they should get out.
Yeah.
But I guess it's been in the back of my mind that pace of shows would pick up. And that some of those shows will, in fact, be great. I don't really have any evidence of that, but that's been, I think that's been my bias that came into this conversation in the first place.
Yeah, my metric was to see how Foundation goes. Foundation's on hiatus because of the virus, along with a lot of other shows.
Yep.
But I was looking forward to the Foundation series from Isaac Asimov being one of their stellar products, and maybe not as great as Mandalorian or Picard, but right up there. That's what I'm watching keenly for. That'll tell the story.
You know, that's interesting, because the Mandalorian is at its heart a Western. The Foundation concept is pretty highbrow. So I don't know if I think you may be setting yourself up for disappointment there.
Well, if I'm disappointed, that's Apple's fault.
Yeah, that is true too. All right, so listen, John, thank you very much.
It was my pleasure to join you. Glad I could be here.
I appreciate that very, very kindly. I also appreciate ExpressVPN. Remember, if you go to expressvpn.com/ACM, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself with ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/ACM. And on that happy note, we will say... And that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add or question, write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that is all for this week.